Hey, welcome to the CEO Anonymous podcast with Pradeep Sangha, a captivating platform designed for CEOs, business owners, and entrepreneurs like you. Our goal is to provide insightful answers to your burning business or personal performance questions. So join our panel of experts as they share their powerful wisdom and expertise. We greatly appreciate your participation. And to submit your questions, simply go to askpradeep.com. Now let's get to the show and delve into the heart of today's question. Well, I'm always excited about doing this podcast episode here, but I'm super excited to have a special guest with us today, someone I got to know over the last few months. And as you know, these episodes are all about answering a question, questions that you have, so our audience has, and we're trying to answer here live on these episodes. And so today's question is, how do I raise capital for my business? And where do I even start? And it's such a good question. And I think we have the right person here to help us out in terms of getting the answers. So we have Trevor Greenway here. He is the CEO and co-founder of Intraval, a really unique solution. I'm going to allow him to talk about it, but we've just started using it ourselves here at Sell Wealthy. And we're excited about seeing what we can do with this solution. So Trevor, thank you for joining us here today.
Thanks, Franz. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really, really looking forward to the conversation.
Well, let's just jump right into it. So as you know, we get a number of questions here and we try to identify an expert in the area to come on our show and actually answer those specific questions. So this question is all around, how do I raise capital and where do I even start? But before we get into that, maybe you can give us a quick update or just an introduction, because this is the first time you're actually on our show. But who are you? What is Intraval? And how did you even get here?
There's a bunch of questions and loaded ones at that. So as you said, you know, I'm the co-founder and CEO, but that doesn't really explain much, right? It's more so like, where'd you come from? So my background's actually in M&A, mergers and acquisitions. So that's why when you and I started talking, we were able to kind of tell some more stories about, you know, the whole Sell Wealthy concept and kind of what where my background was originally. I tell people, you know, we got into software by pure accident, and I'm not ashamed to say it. We were an M&A consultancy for almost a decade, and then we looked for different ways to really, you know, kind of democratize access to business health feedback. Effectively, is what we were doing. So, you know, could we help business owners and their advisors really rally around kind of a common set of data, business health data, to really kind of analyze where a business might sit today, and so that they can make more proactive decisions about their future. So it's kind of like M&A, but like long before the M&A activity was actually ready to occur, could we, you know, democratize access to that kind of feedback for everyone involved? And we decided to build a tool around it, really just designed to make our process more seamless. And we inadvertently cannibalized our entire referral market overnight. And accounting firms and banks and people that used to refer us business saying, hey, I've got a business owner. It's a few years out. Can you start working with them, helping them understand where they are relative to their goals? They said, we're not referring you any M&A business anymore and any consulting business. We just want to license this tool you've built because it solves a really unique problem. It makes us aware of how our business owners are performing so we can be more active in helping them achieve better outcomes. And our business owners then also get that very same feedback, which we believe is a right and that they deserve to have. That kind of made us, you know, scratch our heads and said, well, how big of a problem is it? And so we began working really closely with our customers and saying, well, look, guys, if we kind of ramp this up and made it a little more modular and scalable, like, would this be of value to you? Like, how big is this problem? And so we really just kind of iterated with our customers and, you know, said, hey, we're developing a solution that we really think can serve both you in terms of automation and automated discovery of business owner needs, while concurrently building value for your business owners and having them really monitor their value and grow more healthy, stronger businesses. So kind of a fun journey, accidental in nature. I've had people say, oh, when did you come up with the idea? I didn't come up with this idea. We came up with a concept for our own business. And then it turns out we solved a much larger problem. So it's kind of where we came from, and it's why we developed what we developed. And it's been a fun journey. Certainly not linear, but a fun journey nonetheless.
And that's typically where great ideas start from, is solving a problem that you have as whether it's a business owner or an individual, and then taking it from there, because most likely majority of other people have a very similar problem as well. So you started this, and a lot of people, it's funny when they take a look at tech businesses and they say, you know what, it's easy. You start from your garage, you don't need much investment, then away you go, right? It just catches like wildfire. So this conversation around raising capital, when did that start for you? When did you have to start thinking about, okay, we need to, get some fuel on this and start developing or expanding?
It was probably not as early as a lot of companies would have, where, you really got to develop, you kind of develop a prototype and you say, okay, now we got to make it real. And you typically need capital to make it real, because we had been a business, operating on its own previously. We were able to kind of self-fund some of the initial kind of, startup costs, but only up till a certain point, right? Because we effectively got out of the consultancy business altogether. So we had no more revenue coming in. So that train was leaving the station. And so then it was, okay, how comfortable, how confident are we that we've got the potential for future state product market fit? And product market fit is something that everyone says, you got to get, but then no one can actually tell you when you have it. And some people think they have it earlier than they do. Other people don't even notice that they have it. And so it was like really talking to our customers and saying, is this real? Like, does this actually solve a problem? And will you pay for it? And so once we began to get some confidence, letters of intent around like, there's something real here, it was okay. We had some confidence that, okay, we need capital to really build this out in a way that we can bring to market. And that's scary, because you're kind of, the first raise is kind of, you're going to market and you just have an idea, right? Like, yeah, you've got some backing behind it because you've got some customers that have expressed interest, which is helpful. That's a little bit different than kind of the story that you just told. And we say it all the time, when they're being holed up in your parents' garage, coming up with an idea and be like, the market's going to love this. Validating it first tends to go a long way with actually raising capital. And look, I'm based in London, Ontario. So is my co-founder. There's not a ton of VCs kicking around, right? It's, every time I'm on the phone with a VC and they say, hey, I'm from London, they're like, oh, that's amazing. I'm like, not that one, right? So it's, they're not everywhere, like doling out money. So you've got to be pretty scrappy, and they call it your friends and family round early on. And so you go to people, you find high net worth individuals and you bring up the concept and say, here's the pre-work I've done. Here's some of the validation I've done. These are the potential customers. These are the people that have expressed an interest in the product. They're working with us on iterating it. Now we just got to bring it to life, right? Right now it's kind of in its, MVP, and minimum viable product. And now how are we going to bring it, make it bigger, better, and scalable? And that does require capital. And you just got to be extremely confident in what it is that you're doing, but be validated by it. Be validated by your customers. At the end of the day, early stage investors, they're making a bet. And some of the best advice I ever got is, you can have the best idea. You can even have the makings of the best product in the world or the concept in the world, and they might buy into that. But early stage, they're betting on the founders, because it's not going to be easy. And if you think it is, you're going to be sorely mistaken. And so it's early on, it's, do they believe that you are going to be resilient? And I've had a number of investors say they only invest in resilient founders, because the one thing that they know for sure, they don't know where the market's going. They don't know whether you're going to shoot the moon. The one thing they do know is that at points it's going to get hard. So resiliency is kind of it's table stakes.
And so when you did their first round, were you raising equity, like capital, or, you're promising a certain part of your business out to the people that you're going to, family, friends?
Yeah, so it was a convertible note at onset. And for those that aren't familiar with convertible notes, they kind of have the makings of like a safe, which is another funding mechanism. Safes were kind of, made famous by Y Combinator. They will always use safes when they were raising. We prefer the convertible note because it actually defers the valuation discussion till later. Right. If you're in Silicon Valley and you're a multiple time founder and you have an idea, you can raise millions on an idea. We don't have that luxury. And so what you have to do is say, well, what's it worth? How much equity are you giving up? And then it becomes this argument around, well, what's the valuation? Well, you can't really back it up, right? It's, well, what's the theoretical future valuation is effectively what you're raising on. Whereas a convertible note, it's debt that has an interest coupon rate associated with it that then converts at a later date off of a later round, when that price gets set by the market. And so usually what it does is you either give a 20% discount off of whatever equity price gets set later, usually 2 years later, or it hits a certain cap. And you say, well, like, for instance, I think our early cap, I don't recall the actual number. And it's like, hey guys, if this converts, you're either gonna get a 20% discount of a subsequent round, or it's gonna be like $8 million, $10 million, $12 million. You can pick whatever number. And then you're really selling that concept to the investors. You're going to make some interest along the way. And then when it converts, you're definitely going to get either a discount off of the subsequent round, or it will never go higher than 10. So for instance, if you raise your next round at $20 million, your convertible debt holders, they convert at 10 because that was the cap. That was the highest it could go. So that was the way that we did it, the way we approached it. You can do priced rounds as well. Those are harder. I found them originally and really hard trying to say, okay, what's the value? It's like, are we just forecasting and then saying we believe this is the value, which is what some people do. And some people are very good at it. I believe this was probably the most fair and equitable way and most understandable way for some non-VC style investors to look at, you know, to really understand the investment opportunity.
So you're talking about the first round. Did you use a similar approach for the second round?
We did actually. So we did another convert in our second round. So Pradeep, as we chatted off air, we have just completed a $2 million round. Hasn't been made public yet. So your listeners are hearing about this before the market. So there will be some PR on that. So yeah, we did that. This time we did a convert again, but the reason we did a convert again was actually different. We had a better idea of what our value was. We've now been in market. Our product's been in market for over 2 years now. So we have a better idea of where it is that we fit. We could have done a priced round. We decided again not to, because for any tech investors out there, they know that the market in tech over the last 6-12 months has been damaged. I would argue it's probably actually just right-sized, because it was never as good as it originally looked anyways. I think it kind of went too far, and now I think you're starting to see a bit of a bounce. So we thought it made sense to do a convert again, because we wanted to once again punt the valuation discussion until our next round, when we might do like our Series A, like a larger round, which we think will probably time up nicely with where the market looks like it's bouncing back to. So it didn't make sense to price around today in today's market, which is why you're seeing like there's been so little VC investment over the last while, few quarters, and it's because of that market correction that occurred. So we decided to use the convert vehicle again. It served us well the first time. We decided to do that again the second time.
So where did you for the second round? Where did you even start? What was your did you have a strategy in mind when you started to do that? Did you know exactly what number you were looking for?
We knew what number we were looking for. Because we have finance backgrounds, right? It's, you know, we kind of have an unfair advantage as a you know, tech startup, where, you know, we're actually quite good at financial modeling. And so we had looked through kind of, you know, our recent performance. We'd had some big wins with some few national logos over the last 6 months, and it was now time to really kind of consolidate our victories. We believe that growth in tech, and I guess, you know, it kind of proved out, was a little bit upside down for a while, where it was spend. Didn't matter how much you were burning, as long as you were growing. And that's part of what created the market correction. We've always been kind of more prudent. And, you know, I think you can be capital efficient and grow rapidly at the same time. Maybe not as rapidly as if you weren't capital efficient, but you then don't open yourself up to the downside. So I think because of that, that's how we arrived at the number of 2 million. It was the right number to allow us to hit some of our scaling targets over the next 24 months, but not have to go into a massive burn position to really just deploy it, right? So if you raise too much, then there's an expectation that you're deploying it and you're going to shoot the moon. But in doing that, you also then open up the downside. So we kind of wanted to straddle that line between growth and capital efficiency.
And so you had I'm assuming a plan of exactly, you touched on it a little bit, how you're going to use that capital and how you justified basically going to these individuals and saying, this is why we need the capital. How did those conversations go? Were they short conversations? Were they long conversations? Were they multiple conversations? Did you have a strategy for those conversations?
I did. I have to admit, the second one was much more streamlined than the first, because the first, it's still theoretical, right? Is you're having to almost convince people that product market fit might be there. And you have more data points the second time around to prove that you're much closer to it. Not saying you're fully there, but you're much closer to it. And you have leading indicators of future success. Whereas the first raise, you don't have any of those, right? So it's like you're going into a knife fight with a pillow, right? It's, you know, it's a little more challenging. So I'd say the second time around, we were much more systematic because we had purposefully over the last quarter begun to really kind of ratchet up a little bit of marketing spend. So the way we'd operated in our business is I don't believe in pouring gasoline on something until you know for sure the fire's going to burn. And so we had spent very little in sales and marketing. We wanted to really build a solid foundation of a business that would scale and bear the weight. Like I've always said that money has weight to it. And when you add money and wait to your foundation, you better make damn sure your foundation doesn't crack. So we kind of like were pretty systematic in our spend early on. And then over the last kind of quarter, two quarters, we started to spend a little bit. Not like, we're not talking like Google ads. We're talking like events, speaking engagements. We were in a couple of publications, wrote a few articles. And then we saw our inbound leads go through the roof. We saw our website traffic increase by 300%. Right, we saw like big movers and kind of leading indicators of potential future success if we were actually going to begin to spend in sales and marketing. So with some of that data is what we brought to the market. And we said, yes, we've got some great national logos and we're really proud to have them as partners. But we did that just through hard work and rolling up our sleeves, long sales cycles, like not much sleep. I think we did what we had to do. But now we'd realize that now if we could just have a little bit more capital, we could actually grow our pipeline much more dramatically and more efficiently by being kind of having our brand be the wedge in market, having the brand be known and then have people coming in your door as opposed to having to beat down theirs. And so we kind of had those leading indicators, and that was the justification for the raise and the justification for where the money was going. And that's always much easier than when you go to someone to try and raise capital and you say, yeah, it's going to be like this percentage over here and this percentage over here, and we're going to hire all these heads. Like it's, you've got to really, really boil it down to these are the areas and why. And this is what we anticipate the outcome will be. And it can't be theoretical. You're never going to be perfect. You're not going to be right. But generally, it has to be aligned to past data and then future state performance and how you can tie, link the two together. I think that's really, really important. And I know a lot of fundraising gets challenged at that point, where they say, like the business, makes a ton of sense, you've got some good traction, so where's the money going? And you say, well, you're going to spend a bunch of money over here. It's like, okay, why? And like, what's the anticipated outcome? And I think that that's a question that, good founders have to be prepared for, as opposed to just kind of, saying, well, this is just the next thing we do. Like you do a seed round, you do a series A, and then you work your way down the alphabet. And it's like, yes and no, but you've got to make sure that what you're doing is intentional and you understand exactly what you think the outcome, is going to be.
So did you have a list going into this saying you're going to target these types of investors? You had people that you were going for, if we go back to this original question, how do I raise capital and where do I even start? What are the sources that you took a look at? Was it, again, did you go for family and friends again? Did you look for other companies? Did you have specific people in mind?
So we didn't look for family and friends again because family and friends are wonderful. Like they're the ones that they'll bet on you, right? And it's high net worth individuals from local. That was where we got kind of our pre-seed money. And they were great supporters. They would open doors for us. Like they were just good people. And they supported us when we weren't anything. And then what we wanted to do is wanted to say, well, you want to add more value add investors, not that they're not, but people that are either have an industry focus for any of your verticals that you target or have invested in other tech companies previously, have run a tech company, right? You're looking for the things that you don't have is kind of where you go. And so what we did is we targeted, there's an LP out of Ottawa called Fresh Founders, which is a group of former founders that have all had large exits that actually pulled their money together and began to make investments in specific verticals. And so we brought them on. And so we targeted them. We had a contact that we knew at Fresh Founders and said, we'd love if we could pitch you guys. So we brought them on, and then they obviously had a ton of background in scaling tech companies. I think I make the joke all the time that I'd rather learn from other people's scars than cut myself, right? So just kind of learning from what other people have done was hugely helpful. And that kind of opened up Pandora's box because they all had prior investors into their companies as well. And then, so they started opening up those doors. And so then as a result, why this second round actually went relatively quickly is our lead investor syndicate that came in on this round, they came in for $1.5 million of the two. And they were all former investors of the companies of these people and fresh founders. So I think a lot of it is just looking for the things that you don't have. And there's always someone out there with a bigger network. And you can always go VC, but VC right now is challenged. And I think it's going to come back. I really do. But it's hard right now to raise there. So you have to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the market. And not just assume that, well, everyone just goes the VC route. Like, VC is not for everyone. It's for some great companies. And like, if it's the right model, by all means. And you can do a ton of networking in that space, but you can also waste a lot of time in that space, right? So it's like, what's going on in market? What's the best thing for my business in this moment? And what kind of money will come in that adds value to my business? Because not all money is created equal. So really understanding the skill set behind the money that you're looking for. And in very early days, pre-seed, you don't have that luxury, right? You just say, I got to get this thing up and running so that I can then even have that conversation later. But then you've got to be really mindful of what you have and don't have and what it is might actually add value beyond the money.
Interesting. So you're very strategic from that perspective, looking for investors that could actually bring in additional value, connections, industry experience, very important there. So what do you, so you're a Canadian company, you've focused on the Canadian market. What's kind of your next step that you guys are looking to do? You've taken this money, you talked about sales and marketing a little bit, but what's your next play? What's your next stage, your next phase?
It's US expansion. So we do have a US entity. We are just now kind of expanding into the US. We're in the midst of bringing on a new head of revenue for the US market. That's a big play for us. What we wanted to do is we wanted to build credibility in the Canadian market, get to a couple of national players that have recognizable logos in the US. The problem's the same, right? We're solving for time and visibility for a lot of these large enterprises where they just don't have enough people. Their business owners' expectations are rising and they don't have the internal infrastructure or people to actually deliver on it. And technology ends up being that answer. So at the end of the day, we're not trying to disrupt accounting firms. We're not trying to disrupt banks. We're not trying to disrupt wealth advisory firms. We're actually trying to supercharge them, where let's allow the humans to do only what the humans can do. And let's automate the internal, like the data ingestion, the analysis, and then tee up opportunities right to their doorstep that benefit them and the business owner. That problem's borderless. And so while we wanted to cut our teeth in the Canadian market, you know, every time I go down to the US or I'm speaking at an event, I get constantly reminded that California has as many people as Canada. So I think the market's bigger for sure, but it's also more saturated, right? So you've got to be really systematic as to how you approach that market. Some of it has to be through partnership because you can't put boots on the ground and, you know, really go and attack the entirety of the market. It's just too expensive for a company at our stage. You got to be smart about how you do it. But that's a big part of our expansion. And it's not even just sales and marketing. A lot of it is product related. Like there's a lot going on in the AI space. We're experimenting like crazy right now with AI inside the platform. And there's some really interesting opportunities that have presented themselves. So we're excited about the future because kind of a combination of factors all happening at once. And I think we're well positioned to capitalize on them.
So what was the most difficult part for you when it came to raising capital?
Checking your ego and being okay with a no. As you've gotten to know me a little bit pretty deep, and any listeners that are listening or still listening to me today, is my passion's my biggest curse. It's because I do care like deeply about what it is that we're doing and the problems that we solve and how we can create better outcomes for a lot of different people. And when people don't get that early on, that was hard, right? It's like someone telling you your baby's not pretty, right? It's, you know, you've worked really hard on it. You think that there's something there. Someone just didn't see the vision for what it is that we were doing. That's hard. And you have to take it as feedback and say, well, why? And was this a personality clash? Was this an investment thesis clash? Is the business model flawed? Right, you have to open yourself up to all kinds of possibilities, and you know, I got to admit, there's some feedback that we got early on that actually ended up informing where we went with our company. Because some of the things we thought were like really like deeply at the core of the problem were red herrings, and so you've got to talk a lot to your customers and understand what their actual pain point is to make sure that's what you're solving. They're not going to change into the thing you want them to be. They are what they are. And your problem, your solution has to solve that problem, not the one you think that they have. So I think a lot of early conversations with investors is that, you know, it sucks to hear it, that people don't want to invest. And, you know, for the most part, you try your best to, again, maintain an even keel, not take it personally, and take it as potential constructive feedback. Now, all that being said, I can tell you right now, there's a couple people that like I have on like they're in my brain. It's like my dartboard of people that I'm like, you should have invested, and they said things and they were wrong. And then every day you're like, hey, one day I want to tell this person that they missed out. So I think every founder's got a couple of those, their mental dartboard in their head. But for the most part, you just got to take that criticism as like an opportunity to learn in early stage. But it's challenging. Like, it's a numbers game. You've got to have tons and tons and tons of conversations in order to get to the yeses, because it only takes a few and then momentum builds. But early on, it can be challenging and tiring, and you begin to question why you're doing it.
And so for the, I just want to touch on this part. For the first round, how long did it take you to raise the money that you wanted?
From start to finish, a few months, maybe.
A few months.
With the hardest part is finding the lead, right? You got to find a lead investor that does a deep amount of due diligence, is knowledgeable, is willing to talk to the other investors about like the due diligence that they did. That's one of the best things you can get, is a good lead. Because the hard part is like, it's like death by a thousand cuts. Like, you're trying, if you were trying in theory to raise like $1 million and everyone's writing $10,000 checks, and in order to get everyone to $10,000 checks, you need to talk to 20 people to get to one, right? Like, you're out of time, right? Like, and the company's out of money, right? So it's, you want to find a sizable lead that has credibility, that, you know, is willing to, you know, also help you in that. Because early stage companies, like, you're not hiring an investment banker, right? You're doing it yourself. You're building the pitch deck. You're getting feedback on it. You're beg, borrow, and steal. Like, you're trying to find any way to get to these meetings, and you're trying to tap on other people's networks. You can try more of a one-to-many approach. You're cold calling. Like, it's a lot. And early on, like, that can be tiring and challenging, but, you know, it's the nature of the beast.
Interesting. And so I'm going to ask you a question. You can choose to answer it completely. You can kind of sidestep it if you feel like it. But you know, when you're going for raising capital and you're talking to these investors, you know, one of the questions I would have is, what's your end game? You know, what are you looking to do? And I always take a look, because there's a lot of tech companies out there that, you know, the strategy is build, and then sell, right? Sell for that few hundred million dollar billion dollar mark. What's your end game that you have in mind for yourself? If you feel like sharing it, great. If you don't, if you shared it with your investors, but where do you see Intrabel going? What do you see with your platform, your company?
Really good question. And it's funny, in my head as you were asking, I was like, really, who's going to hear it? Who's going to listen to this? So I was like, is it an investor? Is it a customer? I get asked the question all the time, right? And most investors do ask that. I look at it from the perspective of, I don't work backwards from a number, because I think that can be dangerous, can actually inform poor decision making. Like, at the end of the day, my job is to create shareholder value, like, full stop. And does that mean, like, do I want to create value for all of our, you know, employees? Like, we have a share option plan. Like, all of our employees want a piece of the company. I want to create life-changing events for everyone involved. And am I included in that? Absolutely. But I want to create life-changing events for our investors, for our shareholders, for, you know, our employees. But I don't think that that's mutually exclusive to, like, that we can't change the lives of our customers as well. And I think the more we do that, and that's why we remain wholly, like, solely focused on that. It's like, if we can supercharge accounting firms, banks, and wealth advisory firms while creating unbelievable financial outcomes for the SMBs that we serve, that make up 97% of our economy, then yes, if we do that exceptionally well, we will have created shareholder value. So we become almost obsessed with that, because the shareholder value kind of component, like, that ends up being the outcome. But to work backwards from that, I think you end up making myopic decisions that you think might build shareholder value. But if you're not really solving the problem for your paying customers and the people that they serve, their business owners, then it doesn't matter, because you will never create the shareholder value. So I kind of invert it that way. And I don't say that to, you know, try and make myself out like, oh, you know, what a, you know, he's, you know, doing good in the world. I think you can do both. If you're legitimately solving a problem, then it shouldn't be, well, how much value am I creating for our shareholders? That is the outcome of doing our core elements really, really well.
Well, I can tell why you were able to raise those funds, because you're very good in terms of identifying the value proposition for the organization. And I will point out, because we have this relationship, yeah, you did skirt the answer a little bit, but you did it very, very well. And I expected you to kind of do that too. So good on you, because you got the point across. So I appreciate that. So for the listeners out there, and let's talk about the solution a little bit, right? Let's spend a couple of minutes on the solution, because I think that's important, right? So what does InterVal do? What are you guys known for, and what are you looking to achieve?
So we're known for, you know, we sell to enterprise customers. So we sell to banks, accounting firms, and wealth advisory firms. And what they do is they actually provide our platform to their business owner customers for free. They want their business owners to be constantly monitoring their business health. So for instance, probably the best example I can give you is how we roll out through accounting firms. Accounting firms embed us in their year-end process, where every time a year-end is produced, we extract data from the accounting firm and we produce business health metrics and analysis, both for business owner and for the advisor. The reason we do that is the data is actually quite compelling. Business owners that monitor their business health, which is inclusive of like what their value is, which in it, we actually produce valuations, but also what that means, where they're creating value, where they're strong, where they're weak, and what they can do about it going forward. Business owners that monitor their value grow significantly faster, 17 to 19% faster than business owners that don't. It's like when we step on the scale, right? It's often the manifestation of a bunch of terrible decisions we've made, but it typically drives habits, right? So that's the same thing we are for the business owner. We want them to be passively monitoring their business. How am I performing? Am I actually creating value? While we're doing that for the firm, we're looking for opportunities for the firm to add value to that relationship. It might be there's too much cash in the balance sheet, or there's a tax exposure coming up, or the business owner has set a goal. We have a valuation goal inside the platform and we're tracking them on that journey. Hey guys, there's discussions that should be happening today because we see that, hey, we're getting really close to that goal. So effectively what we're doing is we're letting data make the phone ring. No one likes to hear from their advisor all the time, right? Say, let me run my business. But when the data says there's a risk here or an opportunity here, we're supercharging the relationship between business owner and their advisor. They both do better together when they both can, you know, have more time available because they don't have to be diving through statements to look for either risks or opportunities. We can automate that and we can make the phone ring with a quantifiable, you know, product, service, or advice that adds value to the business owner and creates time savings for the institution. So at its core, that's what we're doing across all of our verticals. We believe that with more time, they can do more and the business owners deserve it.
Yeah, it's a great value proposition. And you know, as I said, we started to use the platform ourselves. So it's really interesting for us to be able to use this with our clients. And working with other large advisory firms, which I do, I see the value in this for sure, hands down, because everybody's screaming that they don't have enough talent, they don't have enough people, they don't have enough time. And any tool that allows people to do their jobs better, more effectively, bring more insight is, I think, is of extreme value these days. And we're going to see more of that. So I encourage you, if you're tuning into this, whether you're a business owner, talk to your accounting firm, see if they have this tool available. If you have working with a wealth advisor, see if they have this tool available. Or if you're an advisor, we have a number of advisors, actually quite a few advisors tuning into this podcast. Take a look at it. So Trevor, where can people go to find out more about InterVal?
They can go to www.inter-val.ai is our website. They can go in and check that out. They can also go to knowyournow.ca is another kind of outward facing version of the platform where people can consume some information about it. Or can always, you know, contact myself or even Pradeep. I'll even send them to you, and then you can kind of point them in the right direction. But yeah, there's tons of information out there about us. We've had a lot of really good traction recently, and I've been quite noticed in market, and we're excited about what we're doing because I think about the people that orbit business owners, and you talk about like advisors who are listening, and you know, you think of the people that have a vested interest in a business owner creating a better financial outcome and the role that they can play as an active participant in that journey. The only thing that's stopping them right now is time. Is how can you do that for everyone? Time doesn't scale well. And so can we create value for the business owner, know that they're growing and creating more complex needs just by simply being in it, and then be notified when you have a job to do. And that, you know, that's the exciting part. And we, I think, you know, recently we've seen a lot about like accounting, you know, CPA graduation rates being so down year over year. And then in the wealth advisory, you know, you've got compliance and you've got other stuff that just sucks up your time. And it's like, you know, you'd love to have deep, meaningful conversations, you know, in the weeds of every business owner you work with, but you just can't do that. And so like to know that we're solving that problem, this is really exciting and rewarding because you can create an outcome where business owner and the advisor both win. And I think I've always been told that, you know, if you have a good solution, if someone lost in order for somebody else to win, you haven't figured out how to solve the problem properly.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Completely on side with that. So Trevor, I want to thank you for joining us. And for those of you tuning in, appreciate it. Thank you. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you got value from the show, we have one simple ask. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and hit subscribe. We'll see you next time.